He's already admitted to lying. Now Michael Cohen admits to stealing. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. Cohen, still being cross-examined by Trump lawyers at the former president's trial in New York, just testified he stole money from the Trump Organization as part of the reimbursement for paying Stormy Daniels to keep an alleged Trump affair quiet before the 2016 election.
This case should be dismissed. It should have never been brought. And the judge is highly conflicted. He's a corrupt judge.
The former president before going into the court this morning.
They have no case. They have no crime.
Now, the former president again denies the charge of falsifying records, reimbursing Cohen. Israel and Hamas have something they agree on. Both are denouncing the chief prosecutor at the International Criminal Court seeking arrest warrants for Israel's prime minister and defense minister and Hamas leaders, alleging they've all committed war crimes in Gaza. Israel's president calls that beyond outrageous. Iran's first vice president's been elevated after President Ibrahim Raisi was killed, along with Iran's foreign minister.
The death of President Raisi in that helicopter crash over the weekend followed reports that two Biden administration officials held indirect talks with Iranian officials last week in Oman. Axios reports the talks involving Biden's top Middle East advisor and the acting U.S. envoy for Iran were the first since Iran's attack on Israel back in April. U.S. officials are trying to avoid escalating tensions in the Middle East, but again over the weekend, Houthi rebels hit a Greek-owned tanker in the Red Sea with a ballistic missile.
Fox Business Network's Grady Trimble. The cargo ship that crashed into the Key Bridge in Baltimore in March, collapsing it, killing six workers, finally being removed from the wreckage.
The dolly is being guided by several tugboats as it moves back to port. The National Transportation Safety Board's preliminary report says the dolly had experienced two electrical blackouts before leaving the port of Baltimore. The ship had two more blackouts when it approached the Key Bridge, causing it to drift off. Of course.
Fox's Tanya J. Powers. America's listening to Fox News.
The weather's warming up. We're about to roar into summer. Everyone has a favorite outdoor activity. Golf, bike riding, bird watching, long walks, sleeping under the tree. Ask 100 people, you get 100 different answers. But if everyday aches and pains are keeping you on the sidelines, I have one answer. Relief Factor. Relief Factor is 100% drug-free. It's a daily supplement that helps your body fight pain naturally. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor uses a unique formula of natural ingredients. It doesn't just mask the pain. It helps reduce or even eliminate it by reducing inflammation. Wherever you're hurting, your back, neck, joints, even muscles, in 3 weeks or less, you'll start to feel the difference all day, every day. So whatever it is you like to do, swimming, pickleball, hanging out in the garden, Relief Factor can help you feel good again and let you again enjoy all of your favorite outdoor activities all summer long. I've been taking Relief Factor for years, and it's really, truly changed my life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Call 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. Fight pain naturally with Relief.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACYuma.com studios. 560 KBLU.
Greetings, Yuma. I'm Sid Callen from Citrine Law. As a young immigrant, I dreamed of change and a better life in the land of the free and the home of the brave. As a United States Marine, I learned the rewards of discipline and the value of serving others. Today, as your attorney, my fight for justice never ends. At Citrine Law, our commitment to justice and your rights never wavers. When you reach out to us for help, we'll always answer. That's why when it comes to injury cases, our fee is based on results. Reach out today at 928-778-7968 or visit citrinelaw.com.
This is Joan, enjoying some me time up on the rim. This is Simon and his friends paddling the Salt River.
And this is Brad. Brad is, well, no one knows where Brad is.
What they all have in common is that they went to azmbdnow.gov to quickly and easily renew their registration or 30 other services. So go to azmbdnow.gov and get more time to enjoy all the things you love.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner. I'm a
attorney with Deason Garner and Hanson, in studio here with Thomas Sparks, Adam Hanson, Cody Beeson, and Martin. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the misconception that a lot of people have about what's going on in America, who's rich, who's poor, who's black, who's white, all these different statistics that we think we know. And this came from a broadcast that Jesse Waters had on Fox the other night. And he did a great job. The problem was he had a lot of like sound bits in there, so I don't want to just play it on the radio because it won't have the same effect. But I'm going to ask these questions to you guys and see what answers you come up with to see how close we are. And then I'll tell you what the polls came up with for the reality of it. The first question was, what percentage of Americans are black or African American?
What would you think, Tom?
20%.
Martine, what do you think?
I think I'd say 15%.
Cody?
Yeah, 15 to 20 sounds about right.
Okay. So generally, the answer was 41% thought that the population of America was made up of African American.
You're saying if you walk up to the normal person on the street and you say, how many black Americans does America have?
Yes.
The common reaction would be around
41%.
41%.
Yeah. The reality is 12%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's the shocker.
And I think what he's getting at here, and the underlying theme of this whole, his whole broadcast was, we focus so much on issues that are actually smaller towards the overall application of the population than is focused on in the media. And he wants to actually see what people are thinking of because how much attention we're spending on some of these issues. Not that it's a small issue, what's going on or what happened with African Americans. Of course, the slave issue has been resurging and reparations for what happened prior to the Civil War, even after the Civil War. But it's so much in your face that regardless of the fact that you live and breathe in reality, you think that the numbers are vastly out of proportion. So the next question was Hispanics. Okay, so we're talking about minority groups here. So what percent of Americans, and I love it because these percentages don't add up, but what percentage of Americans do you believe are Hispanic?
What do you think, Tom?
I'm going to go, based on the last one, it was under what I thought. I'm going to say 25%.
Cody, what do you think?
It seems high, actually, now that I think about it.
I'm going to say 40.
40% Hispanic?
In America?
Oh, I'm thinking locally. yeah, let's go a quarter. Let's say 25%.
Okay. Well, the answer that was given by most people, the most popular answer or the average answer, was 39%. So you were close. Right, most people would think it was about 40%. The reality is 17%.
Okay.
I don't know if that poll was taken before or after the Biden administration, because it's changing daily.
It's quite higher now.
But nonetheless, it is 17% according to these polls that were taken, and so that's way off of what we would think. On a regular basis, and we're thinking that because it's so broadly spread throughout the media how big of an issue this is.
So you're saying, based on those two numbers, 80% of America is either 80%.
Yeah.
Of America, 8 out of 10 people are either black or Hispanic.
Yes. And that's a funny thing too, because another question was, how many people are transgender? What percent of individuals are transgender? Now, of course,
100%.
I just don't know it yet.
I don't know if that's a trick question right off the bat, because if you say that they're a transgender person, I don't know what is politically correct anymore.
I don't know.
Once they identify, can't you just have to say
their pronoun or something?
That they are a woman, even if they were born a man. They're not a transgender woman. They're a woman. Is it bad to say they're a transgender man or woman?
We're looking at Martin because he has the inside beat.
He's got the inside track on this.
He's a lot younger. He's hip.
How old are you, Martin?
I'm 19 years old.
19 years old. But he's got the wisdom of an 80-year-old. Okay, let's hear it, though, Martin. You're in the loop.
Did Sean just offend?
Did I offend you?
No, I don't
Not
really
you,
care.
Transgender. What are we supposed to say?
Is somebody that transitions from a man to a woman, can I call them a transgender woman?
Yeah.
And that's okay to her face?
Yes, but like it's kind of like it's like it's like saying like, oh, you're a male, but like you're not going to be like, oh, this male. You'll just be like he, him. You'll use those pronouns. But if you just don't know, you can be like, oh, that transgender woman, and then that's fine. But if it's like into like a pronoun thing and they are a transgender woman, but they identify with like they, them pronouns or he, him pronouns, it's more respectful to use those when referring to them instead of just saying, oh, that the transgender woman like over there, like they over there, he over there, whatever, him over there, whatever.
So,
well, I don't, so when you say transgender woman, I don't know which one it is. Is it a biological woman that's
transgender? No, it's a biological man.
I get confused with
that. From my understanding, it's the like the gender is what you're transitioning into. So like man to woman is a transgender woman, but woman to man is a transgender man.
Okay. Thank you for
that. That's what I understood too. I think everybody understands that except you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Now 100%. Now that you understand it, 100%. Yes, 100% of the population,
if you will,
understands what transgender woman means. And the population believes that there was, I want to find the statistic here, but it was approximately 15% were transgender.
I would have said 5.
What would you say, Cody?
Oh, I think it's 1. I think there's like less than 1% of the population that actually falls into this.
Adam?
Oh, absolutely. I'm with Cody on that one.
Yeah, it is less than 1%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
less than 1%.
Yes, less than 1%.
That's significant.
So, but we're talking about it all the time.
As if it's 100%.
Yeah.
That's why I made the joke.
Well, we're talking about it as if it's a significant portion of the population. Okay. So the next question is, how many are gay or bisexual? What percent of the population?
What do you think, Tom?
What do I think? I'll say 5%.
I'd like to say 15%. Everybody's gay nowadays.
Cody, what do you think?
25%.
25%? Wow.
Yeah, have you seen this country?
Okay, Sean, what's the actual
what's your guess?
Percentage?
What's your guess?
I thought it was less than 1%.
For gay too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, gotcha.
Transgender and gay. I already had skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the things that are pushed on us, I felt like there are not that many individuals that are identifying as this, and
so very,
so I was already skeptical of it, but
vocal minority is what you're saying.
So according to this, it is 3%.
Okay.
3%.
Split the baby between 1 and 5.
That is the greatest marketing campaign ever.
Yeah.
Because I would never have thought.
I'd be interested to see how these numbers change when you go by generation.
I was thinking that same thing because I think this came up in, it might have been Bill Maher.
He does. He has
talks
this great
about how
thing.
From generation to generation, like,
it doubles.
It doubles.
Every generation, it doubles. So he's like, what? 4 generations from now, we will all be gay.
Yeah,
that was his conclusion. And mathematically speaking, he'd be correct. So here's the question. Actually, this was out there from a media or a Facebook, or it was a tweet or something out there that said it was a teacher. She has 32 students, and she said 20 of them are gay or bisexual. And
this was in Florida, right?
They didn't say specifically. This is
I'm pretty sure it was in Florida because
a fourth grade teacher.
That's where this is all coming out. You know, legislation against this stuff, and I think that was in response to that. Something happening at because Governor DeSantis, they just passed a law saying you can't
talk about gender or sexual preference to kindergarten through third grade individuals, and the teacher came out and said, listen, 20 out of my 32 students are gay, transgender, or bisexual. And that the proportionality of that, I mean, if that's the case, then
statistically impossible.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's why these statistics came up. And I think also to
– And how would you even know that as a teacher? You should not know that.
How would you know that as a child?
Right. You're really grooming these kids if you're talking about their
disgusting
sexual preferences.
They're 8-year-olds.
Yes.
Oh, man, if my kid was in that class.
Be out so soon?
Yeah, that teacher's, yeah.
Smoked. Yeah, that's terrible. My kids don't know. They're going to do whatever an adult tells them to do to get attention from that adult, which just shows you how insidious the teachers are in a lot of these cases. They're, whether they realize it or not, by talking about subjects in a certain way, they're grooming their mentality to approach life in certain ways. They have so much power.
That they're living their truth and they want to thrust that on other kids. What do you think about that, Cody?
Oh, you guys got nailed it. I mean, it's sick to see. It's sick to see what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Governor DeSantis did a lot of good things, is continuing to do a lot of good things in Disney. Of course, you and I, Adam, we've talked about how he went a little too far in his attack against Disney and using the laws to actually
persecute.
Tamper down on the profitability that Disney had. But there were some benefits that Disney was getting that were above and beyond what the average citizen or even a corporation would receive in Florida. It was a tax exempt, basically like an individual sovereignty within Florida.
Yeah. I mean, I think they got like perks like a railroad would get back in, you know, the 1800s.
Yeah, they were given, they were a tax exempt status.
Appointed their own board.
They had their own public utilities. Okay. They weren't subject to the local laws. And so they made their own criteria until what they started to do was really use their funds to make a political campaign against the laws that he was making. Then he says, well, listen, if you are going to use the benefits that we're giving you as a state to attack this state's policies, then the state's policies are going to go back against you as a company. I think he should have taken the high ground. I think he should have said, listen, we're treating every company equal. We're not giving anybody preferential treatment. I think he should have just left Disney's name out of it and let them suffer the consequences instead of targeting Disney specifically. And that would have been fine because that would have been fair. But he targeted Disney and then he went above and beyond and tried to really drive Disney into the ground. And I think that was an overreach of government authority.
I agree with you. I don't understand this to mean that I agree with the practices of what Disney has been doing and putting DEI things in their corporate world and injecting, and they've been vocal about this, injecting, if you like, you use the word grooming, Tom, into their movies, into their media. I do not agree with that, but at the same time, I most definitely, more so than that, I do not agree with the government being going retributable against a corporation in the private market.
For the purpose of the audience, retributable is not a word.
You don't know that. Look it up.
I do know that. I'm a lawyer.
Okay. But anyway, I don't know if it is a word. It sounded pretty close. You know, okay.
It sounded like at least half one.
Look this up, Tom. I just want to be right on this one. I want to win on this one.
Retribution. Go ahead.
Retributable.
No.
That's totally a word.
No.
I think, personally, that the private market ought to determine Disney's fate, not the government. That drives me nuts. It's all fun and games when it's your policies that you like that the government is, you know, using as a weapon against another company. But that's not always going to be the case. And you see that from president to president. A lot of times we fall into this idea of giving our presidents and the executive more and more tools to add to their toolkit, which we kind of go along with because if you like that president during that administration, you're like, yeah, that's necessary and it's promulgating what I want to be promulgated. Well, you have to remember that tool that was put in that executive powers toolkit that you allowed to happen now is going to be passed on to a president that you might not like or agree with their policies. And that's what's happened from time to time, from Clinton to Bush Jr. to Obama. Bush Jr., he added war powers to his toolkit, which Obama expanded on using drone strikes to American citizens without due process.
And I got caught up in that after 9/11, you know, when they wanted to pass that
Patriot Act,
and give the government this very blanket authority to tap into citizens' phone lines and emails and figure out who's a terrorist and who's not. I thought, absolutely, I'm not a terrorist, and let's vet them out.
How do you feel now about that?
I, very much regret that. Absolutely.
Me and my friends in high school used to call each other and just say what we thought would be buzzwords.
Yeah.
To see if we would get tapped or like if we thought the FBI
would
call us.
You did that on purpose?
Yeah, we'd call each other and be like, bomb, like wires, and just see if someone would call us back. We were dumb.
Your dad appreciated that.
Yeah. We were dumb, but no one ever called.
Your retired military father and policeman.
But right. The thing is, like, those conversations are archived, you know, so they may not have access to them now, but if they ever get, you know, a warrant, they can go back and look at that.
Like, yeah, my 15-year-old conversation.
And that's what Edward Snowden was saying. He was saying they're collecting all the information on everybody, and their response to it was, well, we're not actually looking at it. And he says, not now, but if you become a target or if you become political opposition of whoever's in power at the point, then they can go back and look at it. And that's the problem, is it's a warrantless search of all of your information that they already have on hand. And that's the problem. They can't be keeping it and trusted to not look at it without a warrant. So you can't keep it at all. Now he's exiled to Russia, and we don't get that benefit of having a whistleblower in. What was he? Secret? He wasn't. He was
NSA.
NSA, National
Security Advisory.
Okay, thank you.
Some other three-letter agency.
Yeah,
it's retribute. Retribute is the verb form
and
of
retribution.
Yeah, so I used it correctly. Thank you, Tom.
Retributable. What did you say?
Mm-hmm. I think it was retribute.
That's the adverb form of it.
Retributably.
That's an adverb. Just kidding. Well. We're going to discuss what an adverb is when we come back. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Some subtle changes to our weather patterns, slightly cooler temperatures, more in line with late May. And a little bit breezy at times today. Wind gusts as high as 30 miles an hour, so blowing dust may be a factor as you're driving around today. 96 the high this afternoon. Temperatures stay right on track for mid-May all week long. 94 tomorrow, 96 Wednesday. Mid-90s continue Thursday and Friday. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
The song asks, why is the rich man busy dancing while the poor man pays the band? A home warranty doesn't climb on the roof to fix an AC. The AC man does. In AC service, avoid the middleman. Call your neighbor, the AC contractor, or call Air Central Heating and Cooling today.
Sprague Sports is Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters. Why? Because Sprague Sports is the difference. Where else can you buy, sell, trade, or consign firearms with free expert appraisals always? There's nothing like Sprague Sports with local price matching. You can buy with confidence at Sprague's. And all Sprague's firearms come with a lifetime warranty. And talk about customer service. There's a gunsmith always on duty. And there's expert one-day sight-in service. But that's not all. Sprague Sports has got training classes, including Arizona CCW, First Shot, Hunter's Education, and more. Sprague's handles Glock, Blue Label pistols, and is your NFA dealer in suppressors and full autos. That's why we call them the experts. And Sprague's is Yuma's Yeti headquarters. The best Yeti selection and free ice for life. Sprague's has 15 lanes of certified indoor shooting range and gun rentals you can try before you buy. That's Sprague Sports, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters. Responsible gun ownership since 1956. 32nd Street, next to Lowe's.
This is 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We were talking about the percentage of different groups in America. Specifically, we started out with minority groups, how many Hispanics, what the population of Hispanics are in America, what the population of black Americans there are. And the answers were vastly different than the reality. The answers were the general population thinks that there's 40% Hispanics. In reality, it's closer to 17%. The answers for black Americans was 41%, and the reality is it's between 12% and 13%. And for gay and bisexual individuals, it was like 30%. And Jesse Waters he's like, okay, let's put that into perspective here. That means 100 million people are gay or bisexual, he goes, that you'd be sectioning off nearly the East Coast, right? And saying everybody there is gay or bisexual. But he's not far off in what the perception is when we're listening to the media, because everything that's going on in the media is something to do with transgender or gay or bisexual, and the rights that are being apparently infringed upon by the government or by others who are insensitive to their needs and to their ever increasingly constitutional rights that have no mention in the Constitution. So anyhow, the reality is sometimes we don't really understand what's going on just because the media doesn't put it out proportionately. Speaking of population, we had an interesting discussion last night with my kids. It was story time, so I was reading them a book, and we came up with the question as to how many kids we have and why we have the amount that we do. We have six kids, by the way. And my wife said, do you know that the nation with the highest birth rate is Niger, and it is 6.6 kids? And I said, okay. So, you know, we're about on average with that. And the lowest birth rate was something like, I think it was Sweden. And anyhow, America has about 1.9 kids on average. That's slightly below what is needed for population continuity. You need 2.3 kids, with the mortality rate being as it is, to maintain population continuity and make sure that there's a workforce, a young and able-bodied workforce, to maintain the aging population. Anyhow, none of that matters, because what was important was what my kids said. I said, why do you think we have so many kids compared to other families out there, or even country averages? And so my seven-year-old said, well, so you can have somebody to boss around, and you love us. And and the love you was, you know, was kind of an afterthought. It was a trend. I'm like, ah, that's why I have you, huh? So I can just boss you around and have you do all these chores, because, you know, my life is a lot easier because I got you guys around, you know, cleaning up and mowing the lawn and making that kitchen spick and span.
That you dirty.
Yeah.
Right?
So I thought it was interesting, the perception that he had. But I said, no, you know, why do we have you? Like, what is the benefit? Because we pour a lot of time and energy and money, and why do you think we have you kids? And we try to get it out there and convey the message that we love them, and we want them to grow up and have productive lives and be contributing citizens to the community. But I'm not sure that got communicated very well. Adam's kids are much more educated on that issue.
What? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, that when you want to articulate a logical reason to have kids, you kind of stumble a little bit. You're like, man, why do I have you?
Uh-huh.
You cause a lot of headaches sometimes, but it's just this innate, I guess, feeling that it's a good thing, and then it's not something you can readily describe, that the love and then the family ties that come with that. When humanity is all about those family connections, always has been.
To me, recently, I've been thinking about – Cody, did you have something to say?
No. Okay. You're on it.
Recently, I've been thinking to myself, because we are estate planning attorneys. We're in the business of maintaining legacies for families. They come to us because they want to avoid taxes when they die. They want to avoid unnecessary court processes. They want things to be private, not public, when they pass away or become incapacitated. So we facilitate that through different means of legal mechanisms. It could be LLCs, it could be trusts, it could be wills, powers of attorney. We use all these tools that are available under the laws of the United States to help our families hopefully work hard during their life, and then what they've accumulated, pass that down. That's the goal. And to help, you know, with their own kids or their own families or whoever their loved ones might be. And oftentimes, like, we see our clients pass away daily. We we have notices, you know, in the obituaries. We get notices from clients and families calling in, letting us know that a loved one has passed away. And every death is devastating because you dread the day that a loved one passes away and you don't get to be with them anymore. And so recently, I know this is getting philosophical, but I've been thinking about, like, what is the point of all this? If I'm living my life, I do as best as I can. I'm trying to do the best I can. Try to do all these good things, these good deeds in my life. I die and I am relatively forgotten. Like, what is the point of that? Who's going to remember that? Who's going to remember? What's the point of my life, essentially? Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, looking at what I've done over all these years for other families, how is it that you can maintain or preserve your legacy, your mark on this earth, your short time span of when you're on the earth? What are some ways that you can make that last beyond your death? And so ultimately I've come up with, it has to be in the form of naming something after you, like a park, a library, a school that will endure time. It might be a company that you are attributed to. Walt Disney is a good example. We've been talking about the Disney Corporation. Walt Disney is an example of that. His name has gone generations beyond him. So it might be this entity that you create that continues on. You're maintaining your legacy. The other way that I have come up with is, getting back to what Tom is talking about, your children. That is how you promulgate your legacy on Earth. The challenge there is I was telling my wife this the other day. It was like an epiphany. It's like, that is a way that we can increase our legacy. Like, I will make my mark on this world through my kids. That's my goal. But it is a very bad bet because I can control a company while I'm alive. I can design it. I can make it do things, you know, even after I die that will be maintained legally. It'll have to do some certain things and maintain the vision that I had for it. I can put my name on a park or a building that is going to maintain. It's just going to be the same as it was when it was created, and it's going to hold my name on it or something like that. But I have no control over my children and the way that they leave a mark on this world and how it reflects on me as a parent. So it's a very bad bet. But at the same time, the more kids I have, the better the outcome might be. Like, my statistical likelihood of one of those kids out of six might be good and might drive my legacy onward. So,
well, that's my retirement plan, that one of them will still love me when I'm old and take care of me.
Yeah, put you in the home. Sure.
No.
Oh,
no.
Oh, sorry.
But they won't do that.
They won't do that.
Yeah. I think it's to me, I find it just super interesting that when we talk about family, self-interest kind of goes out the window. Like, for human beings, we're pretty selfish beings. Like, we want, you try to get as much gain as you can. You try to leave a bigger mark on the world. But when it comes to your children or your family, you all of a sudden flip the paradigm where, like, you can see this even in government, right? So for federal government, I am very libertarian. I want very little government. Don't mess with my stuff. Go down to the community level, and maybe I'm a little bit more community-centered, and I might have a little bit more a little bit less self-interest, rather. And then I get to my family level, and now all of a sudden I'm thinking more like a socialist or a communist, where I share my food and everything I have with these individuals. And you can see how my mentality changes. The closer you get to home, the less interested you are on yourself, and I think that's an interesting paradigm shift.
Yeah, even for us who are conservatives in this room and have a very biased view on, you know, type of communistic regime and governing system, and hate that style of governing, we all agree that we need to share and we need to contribute to society. We need to not only serve ourselves and do things for selfish reasons. The biggest difference between communism and everybody sharing and giving according to their abilities and taking according to their needs and this sense of community is, one is, it's voluntary. It's done voluntarily. And when you do it with that mentality, then you do it out of love, and the person that receives it has gratitude for what you've done for them, and the person that gives it feels good and has a sense of satisfaction and purpose in their life. When you do it out of force, the person that it's being taken away from is resentful and less likely to continue to produce, and the person that receives it is not grateful. They feel entitled to receive it. That's the major difference. Two systems that kind of have the same objective overall, and that is taking care of everybody, but two different approaches in doing it. And the main variable there is force. And that's what we've got to eliminate. That's why we're trying. Government is force. That is essentially the definition of government. It's force. We want government in certain limited capacities, in that we want to force our foreign enemies to stay out of our country. We want to force individuals that would take over or infringe upon our rights to stay out of our house and stay off our property. But that's where we want the government to stop. We don't want the government to force us to be charitable or, in a sense, take our taxes and pay it out to causes that we don't agree with.
Or take more than they, you know, I was just thinking about this morning, actually, as I was getting ready for work. I was thinking, I was listening to something, and I thought to myself, like, the Biden administration and the many policies that they put in place are taking my money and your money, and it's putting it in this great big pot, and they act like that's their money.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, what has President Biden ever done? He's never worked a job, to my knowledge. He's only been in government, so he's actually never participated in the private market, and yet we have this guy telling us how we should be spending or saving or doing all these things or promulgating all these policies upon us and by force, if you will. And it's like, why are you telling us how to do this stuff when you have no clue? You've never lived a life.
And that's the majority of the elite left.
And the word came to my mind, swamp. You know, that's what they mean by draining the swamp.
It's these professors out there who teach these theories but have never gone out in practice and run a small business to see what actually works. They teach theologically how it might work, and it doesn't work that way. In practice, we see everyday families coming into us and say, yes, I want my kids to all be the decision makers when I pass away. And we say, yeah, that's not going to work.
Sometimes.
You need to have a decision maker, and each of your kids can be the beneficiaries and hold them accountable for what is in your estate and how it's distributed. But you need to have a decision maker, and that's the practical approach to it. But unless you see it, as we have thousands of cases and worked through the scenarios and actually make sure that there is enough money to carry out the objective, then you can't tell other people how they should be spending their dollars. And we get too many professors in there that are so smart that they're not actually in the actual economy participating and contributing to it. And they think they are because they're in these universities. They're getting paid for what they teach and for the indoctrination that they're spewing upon our children. They're getting paid for that. They've already been compensated. They didn't actually return anything back to the community unless they look statistically what is their contribution? How has it built up the community? And when you look statistically, we're seeing that it's tearing down the community. You look at these Ivy League schools, where are the biggest encampments? These movements that are not just civil protests, but they're outright riots against the government, things that Trump is currently on trial for right now, that they're doing themselves and destroying the places of higher living or higher learning. And they are taking down society. And you guys just got to look at how the outcome is. A theory, it can sound good, but what happens in the end? That's what you got to focus on. And I've always had the frame of mind that I think a well-educated individual with just common sense, even at a fifth grade level of civic understanding and what the Constitution is, would do better than 90% of the politicians we have in office today.
We've got to go to break. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Celebrating 30 years of AmeriCorps in Arizona looks like more than 27,000 members, 29 million hours served, nearly 75 million in scholarships, millions of lives changed. When you sign up for AmeriCorps in Arizona, you make a difference. Also, earn a living stipend, plus education scholarships. Join the movement by signing up at serve.az.gov. That's serve.az.gov. This message is sponsored by the Governor's Office of Youth, Faith, and Family.
It doesn't get much better than having a job you love working with people you love. children.
And when you become a certified child care provider, you can spend your days surrounded by your favorite people. Enjoy a fulfilling career caring for up to four children in your home. You'll get to run your own business, support children's development, provide parents with peace of mind, and make a difference in your community. Get certified to become a child care provider at childcare.azccrr.com. Sponsored by the Arizona Department of Economic Security.
Attention employers! Are you in need of skilled workers to fill key positions within your company? Be part of the change. Join Arizona at Work, Yuma County, in May and June to build your labor force in Yuma County. Many highly qualified individuals, unfortunately, find themselves unemployed through no fault of their own, but their loss can be your gain. By partnering with Arizona at Work, you'll get access to this pool of motivated candidates with a wide range of skills and experiences. You can be reimbursed for up to 50% of the wages when participating in the on-the-job training program. With Arizona at Work. Call Business Services Monday through Friday for more information. 928-329-0990. That's 329-0990. 329-0990. Use extension 3002. Arizona at Work. Yuma County. WIOA. Title 1B. Dislocated Worker and Rapid Response Programs. Funded 100% by the U.S. Department of Labor. The funding amount for FY23-24 is $2,593,558.
Never miss a minute of your favorite shows on KBLU with the new KBLU mobile app. Go to KBLUAM.com and click on the link to download the app and then take us with you wherever you go. You can always hear KBLU on the go, and the app is perfect as you drive. It interfaces with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Download the KBLU app now at KBLUAM.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. We've been talking a lot today about the statistics that Sean threw out at the very beginning of the show. We kind of revisited them last segment. Regarding the public's perception of minority groups, I would say, wouldn't you classify those as minority groups in our society here in the United States? We talked about the black population, the Hispanic population, the gay population and the transgender population, and the perception of the general public is that the percentages of those among us that identify with those types of classes or groups are way overboard. We talked about it being, in reality, a lot of people thought about what is the black Americans being up at like 40%, something like that.
Yeah.
In reality, what are they? They're like
12%.
Mm-hmm. It's less than Hispanics, which I guess that's not too surprising in our where we live. You know, I honestly thought the statistics for Hispanics would be way more. I thought it'd be like in what people thought was like around like 39%. Mm-hmm. In reality, it's about 18%, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
17-18%. And then for transgenders, the reality, the perception of the general public is that there are, what was that? I don't remember that statistic. It was like maybe
for transgender.
Yeah, I think it was like 15% or something like that.
Yeah. And it's like far less than 1.
Yeah, it's less than 1%. And gays was
3%.
But I think people thought it was 30%. That's
right.
That's a huge,
yeah, it's huge jump.
Calculation. The point of this whole show, I guess, is that it's really interesting that the perception of us as American citizens is way off. And why is that? Most likely is because it's what we're being fed. It seems like the policies that are being thrust upon us are all to benefit these really, I mean, we're not talking like kind of minorities. We're saying like really, really minority or very, very slim amount of all of us in the United States of America. And the majority of us, you know, are being forced by our government to live out these policies or accept these policies as if these minority groups are the majority. Have we seen that before, Tom?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, just a little sidebar from what you were just talking about first is, like, the vision of the United States of America is that everybody has their constitutional rights. So we're not saying that just because you're a minority that you get less rights. Everyone has the same base rights. But when we talk about policies that go beyond and you enjoy, you know, benefits that other citizens aren't going to get, then I think these statistics become more relevant. So I just want to make that clear that just because people have a less of a population percentage doesn't mean that they get less rights. But I think that it does play into what's going to be the overall policy of benefits in the country. But it hasn't always been that way, where we talk about the percentage of the population of what the demographics are versus how many people are on welfare, let's say. You know, those numbers get tipped upside down now, where minorities are on a far higher percentage of them are on welfare than, let's say, white people. And you got to ask yourself that question as well. Why is that? Why do we have these welfare programs in place? And what would happen if we didn't have them? There was an 1800s author, he's famous, Alexis de Tocqueville, who wrote a famous book. It's titled Democracy in America. So he's a Frenchman who comes over in the 1800s just to see, like, what is this American country about? I hear so many great things from across the pond. Let me go check it out. So he comes in, he writes a book about what he observes with this young American democracy. And what he finds out is one of the points that he makes in this book is that it could not exist without a robust, charitable arm from the private citizens. And that's what he sees. He sees people lined up at soup kitchens and churches. He sees a very generous population helping out their neighbors. And he is so impressed upon it, it actually makes it into his book as one of the core tenets that makes our democracy work. And that changed starting with the FDR administration, where they shifted the charitable arm of the country from the private citizen to the government. You know, part of that was because of the 1929 crash of the stock market. You had a lot of people in extreme poverty. Taking a heightened look at that crash, modern economists say that his policies actually prolonged the Great Depression about 10 years than it had to be. But I just think that's interesting that I think when if you ask someone on the street, like, what if we just got rid of welfare, what would happen? Most people, I think, would think that everyone would start dying in the streets, and I don't think that's true.
What do you think about that, Cody?
I think Thomas is absolutely right. If you look at history and look at when churches I think churches, because at the end of the day, the church used to educate the community. It used to provide the food for the needy. And we've really have pushed them in a corner to eliminate that. There is no charitable. I mean, there is a charitable church, but it does not have the same place in society that it did 100 years ago. And that being said, you can look at also like the faith in our society and how that's deteriorated. But at the end of the day, yeah, government has taken over where it really didn't need to. This was already handled, and I think we were better off as a people when it was closer to home.
I think as you're talking, the thought came to me, I think it's a general perception that religion or these established churches are out to get something for themselves. I think is a general sentiment among the youth today. They're naturally skeptical of any organized religion. And I don't know where that sentiment comes from, but that drives the idea behind what you're talking about. Like if churches were why are churches historically the ones that kind of helped us to be more charitable as a people voluntarily, as opposed to being forced to be charitable through tax means through our government? Why is that? Because most of those churches have, they are their doctrine is based on some greater being, such that if you do good to other men, you're serving that greater being, and the hope is that you get to, reap the fruits of that after this life. That's the general tenet of most organized religions. And so are you really being charitable then, Tom? If you're doing it for an ulterior motive, I would call it, if I give you food that you can't afford, I see you're down on hard times, and I get into my pantry or I go to the store and buy food for you because maybe I have a little bit more means. Do I do that because I feel like I'm going to get a reward after this life, or is it because I care for you and I want to make sure that you're taken care of?
Well, I think it's both. So my Judeo-Christian values, which is what the country is founded on, says that you should do what God tells you to do. That's the ultimate commandment, is love God and do what you think he wants you to do. Now, like when Jesus in the New Testament was on the earth, he said, you know, impart of your substance to the poor. He didn't say give it to Caesar and let him redistribute it to everybody. Like that wasn't the commandment. So I think that it cheapens charity when it's compelled, obviously, because you give it to the government, they choose who they want to give it to, and it's really not, I don't think, counted for your charitableness anymore because you had to give it anyway.
You don't get the personal gratification out of that either. I mean, you don't learn something personally right. when you do that.
It unbinds the community. I think communities were much closer knit back when you had to rely on each other and not this, you know, the government on a hill over on, you know, the Washington, D.C. area. You know, it's too far away. And when you remove it from the local community to something that's so far away, the entitlement goes up. People think that they're entitled to everybody else's money because they don't have to ask them for it door to door anymore. How hard would it be if you had to have a surgery and you had to go knock on all your neighbors' doors and saying, I need your $100, please, so I can pay for my surgery? It would be a totally different mentality than the government writing you a check off of Medicaid to be able to pay for it.
And that reminds me of GoFundMe. You know, I think that's a crowdsource funding website that people will turn to. You brought up that surgery, for example, that you might need. And sometimes that happens where a person comes on and they've had these significant medical needs and they'll go to GoFundMe, set up a page, ask for contributions. And it's fun to see the charity at work in the private sector without government being involved. This happened recently with those frat boys, remember, a few weeks ago?
Throw them a rager.
Yeah, throw them the biggest rager ever. And, like, that just blew up. It was so funny to see. It's fun to see charity at work and not being compelled by the government, like you say. And the hope is that we continue that American spirit. That's my hope. I think that comes in our generations. Sean, last segment, talked about this statistic that on average, I think American families are having 1.9 children, and we need to really have about 2.3 children to maintain our way of life and our workforce and things like that. That statistic worries me because if we're not replenishing the American traditions in our country, what happens in that void? What comes in is perhaps outside forces from not saying that other countries aren't as good as the United States or people from those countries, but the values of the Constitution are definitely not known in other countries around the world to the depth that the American society has seen for many, many, hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And when you have that void, is that going to be filled by some other non-appreciative cultures, you know, just treading all over the Constitution and what it stands for? It's been working for the last 200 plus years. Are we in an area, are we approaching a time now where, because we're not having children and instilling these values in them, are we going to lose it? Are we going to lose a republic? What do you think, Cody?
Yeah, we are certainly eroding, you know, what makes us great. So it seems that we're getting that way. And we're replacing it with other values that clearly don't represent our demographics, you know. And I think when we started the segment, or we started the show with the first segment, and we went through the numbers, and I didn't realize how off we were, you know. But again, I'm just thinking, like, what does our corporations put forward? You know, they must put things forward for the majority of us. But no, it doesn't seem that way. It's a small minority that the majority is buying into.
And why is that? I mean, are there kickbacks happening? What would be the motivation? I don't believe they truly believe it. Do you? I mean, do you really believe that these corporations are putting all their eggs in these baskets, these diversity baskets and things like that, that are being thrust upon us? Do they truly believe it, or is there some benefit to it? I would argue behind the scenes. I mean, a corporation isn't going to do anything that doesn't line their own pockets. You know, they have to be profitable. And so what is the motivation here? I don't understand. Is it power, perceived power in the government, in the sense of, like, if Disney plays along with what the Biden administration is pushing on us, these DEI policies and things like that, are they doing that just to appease the government, hoping that they will get special treatment? Is that the idea behind it? Or do they truly believe these things that they are trying to push in their corporate culture. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I don't think they truly believe it. I think there's either a kickback or they're trying to catch a wave that they think is popular. And I think you saw that with the – I think it was UNC. Like Ann Coulter just tweeted something about them the other day that they had just fired their entire DEI department and they put the funding back into their campus police.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's somebody finally waking up and saying, this is causing way more problems than it's worth. And that calculus in the head is straight, like, economical. So when people realize that all of this stuff is actually hurting their pocketbook and not helping it, that's when you're going to see a shift back.
And that board vote was unanimous. It wasn't like, you know, a split vote at all. It was unanimous.
Mm-hmm.
Defund the DEI department and shift all that money over to the campus police. Coincidentally, that goes with what we're talking about, the GoFundMe. These frat boys, that was UNC as well,
mm-hmm.
North Carolina, Tar Heels. Cody, looked like you had something to say.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting when you look at places like Target, for example, who made they died on the hill of pushing LGBT, QRST, LMNOP stuff.
Plus.
Am I not allowed to say that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Point being is,
we'll find out.
They really pushed that. And now if you look at this new next quarter of sales, they've decreased how much of that they're putting out on the sales floor because it's not equating to dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to look at those. And they're getting heat for it because there's not enough out there. But you know, the response is, look, it's not selling.
Right. It's a total miscue based on them listening to that vocal minority. Like they had, just like we had bad statistics, we had a bad, you know, take on what the statistics would be. I think they did too. And they realize now that their perceived audience isn't as big as they thought it would be.
Yeah, it's less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the time we have for this show. We will talk to you next week. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
Is your prostate secretly being destroyed without you knowing it? All the ads for these prostate pills, like Super Beta Prostate, Saw Palmetto, Prostastream, Prostagenix, and others, want to know which pills work and which are garbage? Now you can. Get a free copy of the new guide, Prostate Secrets, that pulls back the curtain on the prostate pill industry. Learn what is really in these pills. Which pill has over 987 adverse event reports filed against it with the FDA? It's shocking. Learn the one food to avoid that is a prostate killer, and discover the three so-called health foods that destroy your prostate. Get your free copy at prostatesecrets.com. That's prostatesecrets.com. This free guide will show you how to end your prostate problems without drugs or surgery, five important things to do to protect your prostate, and much more. Warning, this guide is controversial and may be offensive to some readers as it pulls no punches. So go to prostatesecrets.com, prostatesecrets.com, that's prostatesecrets.com.
Once upon a time, air conditioning was simple. It blew cold air, or it didn't. Today, air conditioning is more than cooling. Healthy, conditioned air is essential. When people ask me who I trust, I tell them. In Yuma, the only thing you need to know about air conditioning is Hansberger Refrigeration. Find them at HansbergerRefrige.com. That's Hansberger, R-E-F-R-I-G.com.
Hansberger Refrigeration and Electric. Hansberger, count on us.
If you can dream it, Firearms Unknown can build it with a full custom shop that can provide Cerakote and laser services. Firearms Unknown has all the top names of firearms, accessories, and a huge selection of knives. Shooting sports, hunting, personal protection. If you need it, we have it at prices that can't be beat. Like the Smith & Wesson SD9, starting at just $299 for a 9mm pistol. Firearms Unknown, where the only thing unknown is what you want and when you'll get here. 801 West 32nd Street in Yuma or at firearmsunknown.com.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.